Kristen with Innsbank.
And I'm Corey with Innsbank. Welcome to Brainstorm. Today we're with...
I'm Darden Copeland with the Calvert Street Group.
Corey.
Yeah?
I know you have an icebreaker.
I do have an icebreaker. Can I roll with that instead? All right. Darden, the last time I saw you, we were in like a garage on Rosa Parks Boulevard drinking like pretty fancy wine on a Monday night.
On a Monday night.
But details are kind of fuzzy because I was drinking a lot of Herman Story wine.
Herman Story.
Yeah.
So my wife and I are friends with this winemaker in California, and you know, we subscribe to his wine club. And so he ships out, I don't know, we get 6 bottles in the fall, 6 bottles in the spring. And he sends out these really funny, he's just quite the character. He sends out these really funny emails, and I always read them because he's just quirky. And he said, hey, I'm going on a bus tour across the country. You know, me, my staff, we're going to load up the bus with wine and we'll come to a city near you. Email me if you're interested in hosting. And I emailed and I said, hey, Russell, like, you know, if you're coming to Nashville, let us know. And he calls 2 days later and says, hey, we're picking up the bus in Atlanta. We want the first stop to be Nashville. I said, great, we'd love to have you. Like, you know, he said, yeah, can you do it in your backyard or this or that? And I said, well, we've got this warehouse downtown that, you know, it's 7,000 square feet. Let's just do it there. We'll bring in some catering. We'll invite some friends. And I think he was excited to have a couple hundred people there. So we just opened up the warehouse. And he later told me that the night that he wanted to do it was Monday, which was kind of tough to do a big wine dinner. But they came in on Sunday night. I went down and met them. And then we got set up on Monday, and I don't know, we had a couple hundred people there, and I think everybody had a good time.
Oh my gosh, we had a great time.
He signed up a lot of new members for his wine club, and of all the cities he went to, I think from here it was St. Louis, and then, I mean, he went all across the country, but he said the best event was Nashville, so thank you for coming.
Of course, he had a blast,
his team had a blast, and I got free wine for the next 2 years because
of
that.
Oh my gosh. Nice.
Yeah, so when's he coming back so that we can recreate this?
I don't know if he's going to come back. I mean, he got thrown out of Roberts and on Sunday night. So I'm not sure he's allowed back in Roberts. But
that's a tough place to get kicked out of.
Yeah.
That's like, you have to try.
Oh, he tried. He tried.
He tried really hard.
He tried. So yeah, I walked him back up to the bus and put him to bed. And then Monday... did it all over again.
He have like a, okay, so we actually finance a lot of those motor coaches, like a lot of Nashville. And so question, did he have a star coach with like the, where the back of it was a bedroom, or did he have like a 12 bunker where you like put him to bed on like the third row?
He had the big, there were bunks, but there was also like the suite thing.
Okay,
so
yeah,
it was a primo tour bus. So I haven't seen too many tour buses, but
yeah.
It was incredible.
They're insane.
Yeah.
Like they're so, I mean, most of these buses are, these buses cost more than like average house. And like the build out on them is like several hundred thousand dollars. And they're like, some of them can, like with the pop outs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like once they're parked.
Yeah.
Like it's pretty roomy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was impressive.
Slide out. That's a better, thank you.
Yeah. Recently become an RV owner, so I know all the lingo.
That's the pandemic thing to do, right?
You're an RV enthusiast.
The RV enthusiast, yeah.
he just did it for 2 weeks or whatever, but it was a very nice custom motor coach. So yeah, we had a great wine tasting. If you're ever in Paso Robles, that's the guy to go see. I'll give you some information.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just remember like we had... my husband and I had a cat at the time who was getting a tumor removed the next day. And so we literally like, I was definitively drinking my sorrows. And so, and then we went out, a group of us went out after and ended up closing down the Hermitage. And I remember thinking, how does Chad and Jim do this? This is impressive.
On a Monday night.
On a Monday night. Yeah. The next day I was like, I feel kind of rough. And they were like, we're fine.
Okay. Bounced right
back. It's impressive. Yeah.
It's a fun event.
Cool. Yeah, it was really fun. Yeah. Okay, because you had, it was barbecue, right? The catering?
Yeah, I think we catered in maybe Martin's, or it might have been Edley's.
Yeah.
I think it was Edley's, actually.
I wanted to say Edley's, but I didn't want to say it incorrectly in case it wasn't Edley's. So.
It was great, whatever it was. It was,
yeah.
But the wine was the star of the show.
Yeah.
Of course.
It was.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear about you. Tell us about yourself. Where you're from, how you got started.
Sure. So grew up in Virginia, born in North Carolina, but grew up in Virginia. and just did political campaigns coming out of school. I went to school at the University of Richmond, and, you know, I had a lot of friends that went into, you know, medical sales or pharmaceutical sales or management consulting. A number went to Wall Street, and I, it just didn't really appeal to me. I had done some political campaigns in high school and then in college, and loved political campaigns. I wasn't sure you could make a career out of it, because you, every November, whether you win or lose, you're sort of out of a job, mm-hmm. right? You go home for Thanksgiving, and you know, your mom's like, well, what are you doing now? Well, I'm looking for a job. You go home for Christmas, and it's like, well, still looking for a job. But I got pretty good at campaigns and enjoyed it. So when I got out of school, I went straight into the campaign life. And as you get better at it, it's not just every 4 years or every 2 years or even every other, or, you know, every year. There are political campaigns year round somewhere. And so mm-hmm. if you're good at it, you can sort of parlay that into, you know, a little bit of a career. And I did that for a long time, working for individual candidates. And there comes a point, though, where you just sort of burn out working for this guy or gal running for whatever the office is. And, mm-hmm. and certainly in partisan politics, you know, if you're a Democrat, here's your playbook. If you're a Republican, here's your playbook. And then just attack each other. Mm-hmm. And I sort of thought there's got to be more to it than just that. And you know, personally, I have pretty strong beliefs and you know, side with one political party. But I thought, man, there's probably some room in the middle somewhere. And it doesn't make sense to just continually try and beat up on, you know, the other side just mm-hmm. for sport. So I wanted to figure out, you know, what could I do with that skill set? And I recognized that in the world of, you know, land use and real estate and development, there are a lot of great, you know, projects, real estate projects, private public partnerships, whatever it may be, that sort of need a campaign manager to get the project through the approval process. And so there's the skill set that you learn in political campaigns on, you know, education and persuasion and testing your messages and figuring out what resonates with people, that it's transferable to a real estate project. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even down to like, you know, election night on a political campaign is, you know, the Tuesday in November where you've got to get your people to go and vote. Well, same thing with the planning board. You've got to get people to show up and say, wait a minute, this is a good project. We're for this project. Let me explain why. Right. And so even in political terms or campaign terms, you call it GOTV, get out the vote. Same thing for, you know, a wind farm that's trying to get permitted in rural Nebraska, mm-hmm. Or a solar farm in Colorado, or a hotel project in, you know, downtown Des Moines or whatever it is. So yeah. All of those things are, you know, quickly becoming political, and they're quickly, you know, if you don't run a campaign around it, then, you know, you might lose. Mm-hmm. There are $500 million projects that go to die on a Tuesday night city council race. There are five members of the board. It could be 3-2 in your favor. It could be 2-3 against you. How do you get the 3-2? And so stepping away from campaigns, I did campaigns. I did the Gore campaign in 2000 and a number of campaigns up to 2004. I did the Lieberman campaign, then the John Kerry campaign. And, you know, we didn't take the White House in either of those two cases. And I was just sort of burned out. And so I thought, I need something else that still satisfies the thrill and the adrenaline of an election day and winning a vote and kind of the crisis of the day or of the hour, but maybe has a different pace than what political campaigns had. And so I just sort of stumbled into this line of work. And I worked with another PR firm for a little bit, but then quickly decided that this was something I could do myself. And so in 2009, I had the opportunity to just sort of pull the trigger and put my own company together. And I named it Calvert Street Group. Mm-hmm. I used to live on Calvert Street in Washington, D.C. And it's a very residential street that stretches from kind of Georgetown, Burleith area, past the Naval Observatory, you know, Woodley, Adams Morgan. And it's just this residential street. And in D.C., if you're on Capitol Hill, you know, you're doing policy, right? It's legislative branch. If you're on K Street, you're a lobbyist. And if you're on Calvert Street, it's sort of just this long residential street. I thought Main Street Strategies was a little too cliche. So so I named it Calvert Street. And so almost 14 years. And yeah. So we've been you know, growing ever since. So
okay, I gotta take it back even further.
Yeah.
When you said you had done some political campaigns like in high school? Were you running for class president?
No.
Were you helping someone campaign?
There was a small ballot measure in our community. I was not a swimmer in school. I ran cross country and basketball and whatnot, but our swim team had to get on a bus every day and drive 45 minutes to just to use a pool. And there was a bond referendum on the local township ballot to, I don't know if it was a, you know, a penny or what it was, but to sort of fund the money necessary to help the school build a new facility. Mm. It ultimately was defeated, but I was sort of enamored with this idea that you could sort of make change and you know, work on something that wasn't D versus R, but this is just for the betterment of our little school and our swim team and building that infrastructure. So sort of got my eyes open to it in high school and had great teachers there. I did, you know, model Congress and sort of the different things there. But so I was sort of hooked in high school and, you know, history and all the social studies and I was fine at math and sciences too, but really took a shine to the social sciences and that's how I got on that path. Yeah.
So when you went to college, were you like set on, I don't know if it was a political science degree or whatever path you chose to take, were you like, I already know what I want to do?
Yeah. So I went to the University of Richmond, and at the time, and they may still be the only school, they offered a degree, a major in leadership studies. I didn't think that was enough to just have that. So I majored in leadership studies, but also political science, so dual major. And then I had enough ancillary credits to do communications in there as a minor.
Overachiever.
Well, I'd gladly give up one of those if I'd gone abroad. I wish I'd traveled abroad in college, but just, you know, sort of worked at it to get the you know, the double major in there. And then just found campaigns. Like I had a great teacher or a professor in school and he said, hey, I know this guy, he's the lieutenant governor, he's running for governor, and you should go intern for him and work for him. And so I did and was just hooked. And that was my first taste of campaigns. It was 1997. And our guy, he was sitting lieutenant governor. He's now a member of Congress, Don Beyer. He was lieutenant governor for 8 years, running for governor. And we got absolutely smoked. And I think the whole staff knew on election day we were going to lose bad. But here I am thinking, this is so much fun. And we got absolutely smoked. It was the worst loss in Virginia history up to that point. Up to that point. But still an incredible, you know, human being, incredible man. He and his wife are great. He's now in Congress and still serving
and
the
sure
people.
I'm sure you learned from that too. Like after such a devastating loss, how maybe to...
You learn more when you lose than when you win. When you win, it's like, oh, I did everything right. Look at me.
I don't need to change a thing.
Yeah, that was so perfect.
Yeah.
What would they have done with
like,
that?
You were like, well, this is all because of me. This has nothing to do with voters or the message or the candidate at all.
I don't need to change a thing.
Yeah. So you can really hurt your arm patting yourself on the back when you win, but when you lose, you psychoanalyze everything and you get better that way. And I've been fortunate to have lost some and won some. So I've learned plenty.
So you mentioned that you have kind of a pretty set of beliefs. Have you ever had to do a campaign for maybe a candidate that is on the opposite side of the aisle?
No, I mean, you know, I was at the point where I could sort of pick the candidates that I wanted to work for. And I actually interviewed with a guy named Gary Chico. He was the Secretary of Education in Illinois, and he was running for Senate in 2004 against a really well-known, you know, family name in Illinois politics and a very well-funded, self-funding, like, you know, mega millionaire. And then this little state senator named Barack Obama. I interviewed with the guy and I didn't like him. I said, I don't want to go work. And I thought this guy needed to be more worried about the guy with the name recognition and the family history and the guy that had all the money in the world. Not so much, you know, the state senator named Barack Hussein Obama. And I'm glad I didn't work for the guy, but, you know, so I got to pick who I wanted to work for, and I've never really had to compromise my values in who I work for. And that's true even today with our kind of corporate clients. I mean, we work for a lot of solar developers and wind farm developers, and we've never done any, you know, coal mining or private prisons or, you know, there's certain things that we probably would not ever really want to go work for. Yeah. So we've got plenty to say grace over on what we do want to work for and what our staff want to work on. So we've never really had to compromise in that regard. So
that's nice.
Yeah.
Do you feel like sometimes there's like too much of an ask from you? Like you have to pick and choose, like there's too big of a pool of.
No, sometimes, I mean, I think, you know, we're definitely a little choosier, I guess, in where we spend our time, and we sort of look at, you know, what are the markets we want to be in? Who are the customers we want to go and work for? And we sort of proactively we'll talk with them. Certainly when I first started, it was, you know, I would have not taken anybody, but you know, I certainly was easier to, it's easier to turn down work now, I guess, than it was, you know, 14 years ago.
But when you're like that hungry for experience and like learning opportunities and kind of networking, like you're like, it's harder to be discerning on like which jobs you pick up.
But, yeah, true.
So what part of Virginia are you from?
Culpeper, Virginia.
Oh, okay. I spent a stint in Lynchburg, Virginia. So, yeah. I say stint because I hate it there.
Lynchburg's tough. Lynchburg's tough.
It's tough. I just shouldn't say I hate it, but yeah, it's just not my speed. So,
Culpeper was a great place to grow up. My mom and dad were neighbors and king and queen of the prom, and they're still there today. And so I love going back to Culpeper. I've got a solar project in Culpeper and we've had one in Culpeper. We've got another one in the next town over. And so my mom's always sending clips of from the local paper, like, hey, there's this new solar developer there, got this new project.
Mom.
I'm like, all right, mom, I'll call. And then I called one and they're like, yeah, can you be here, you know, next week? And I was like, yeah. And so I flew up and I just popped in on my parents and they're like, what are you doing here? I was like, what's for dinner? And I was like, you sent this clip of the solar project. You told me to come.
I'm your son. I can walk in whenever I want.
And so we got the project so I owe my mom a finder's fee on that.
I was going to say, did you give your mom a referral credit? Like,
sort of, yeah. So great. I mean, that's it was great place to grow up and still have a lot of family spread throughout Virginia.
My husband has some family in the Culpeper area.
Okay.
And so we have not gone. Whenever we go to Virginia, we're going, like my mom and my sisters live in Lynchburg still, Lynchburg area. But yeah, I literally, like, I graduated college and I was like, get me back to Boston as fast as you can. Like, I didn't even stay long enough to, like, go to my graduation. I literally, like, turned in my last assignment and was like, and I'm out.
See ya. Wow. I hate it here.
Yeah. But yeah, I haven't spent a ton of time in Culpeper, but it's not too far.
Okay, so this was off camera, but we were having a conversation and you had alluded to not liking the word entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So I really want to ask you about that.
I mean, I don't love the word just because, and people will say, oh, Darden, you know, you're an entrepreneur. And I'm like, no, I'm not. You know, I needed a job. And so
when's your next job?
Yeah. So I built a business around it. Nobody else would hire me. So I had to hire myself. I think there are certainly people that are entrepreneurial and I respect those people. What I don't like about the word, and it's not so much the word, it's the people that introduce themselves as an entrepreneur. Hey, my name is Joe. I'm an entrepreneur.
That's like sleazy car salesman
tell me about that, Joe. And I think there are people that, I think the connotation for me on entrepreneur is somebody's trying to build something so that they can then go sell it and then go do the next thing. And there's some people that are entrepreneurial and they want to change the world for good and, you know, build a cure for cancer or whatever it is. And there's some people that are building a company to make as much money as they can and squeeze whatever they can out of it, sell it, and then go try and do the next thing. And that is the part that I don't like. And so I'm always kind of, you know, one eye up when somebody says I'm an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. You know,
there should be levels. Are you entrepreneur 1, 2, or 3? Are you in
levels
it?
Or like you have to meet some sort of threshold before you can be called that. I don't know.
I feel like if you have to say I am an entrepreneur, like if you have to declare it, then you probably aren't one.
Right.
Like if that's something that like people don't automatically recognize in you, then chances are you're lying.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of a weird.
And again, it's for me, it's the idea of like, I'm going to take something and build it up and maybe artificially inflate it as much as I can, and I'm going to sell it, and whatever happens to it after that is not my problem. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take my money and go do the next thing. And I get it. Maybe they're creating jobs and this or that, but that's never been really
not what you're in it
my
for.
And there's
style.
No passion behind that, right? Like, mm-hmm. like Calvert Street feels more like a passion project
totally.
Than a like, let's see what we can, if we can milk this for all it's worth.
Yeah.
It's more of a like, this is something that you are interested in and passionate about. And so I think that probably comes through in your work as well.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely love my day job. Absolutely. And so, I mean, an entrepreneur in the way I'm categorizing it, I think they would have sold Calvert Street a long time ago to go do the next thing. And mm-hmm. I'm going to do this for the next, you know, 25 years.
As long as they let you.
As long as they let me, yeah. So, yeah, the word is a little fuzzy for me.
Interesting.
So you and your wife are kind of a little power couple. She runs her own business as well.
She's the power. I just make it a couple. She's a bad. She's a badass.
Box that clip up for him, and he can send it to her.
Yeah, that's an anniversary gift right there. Is that coming up?
Is that, can I get credit for that?
We'll
no,
talk
she
to Natalie.
She's incredible. Yeah. She smartest woman I've ever met. I don't know what she's doing with me, but she's a supermodel on top of that. And she's a nurse, now a nurse practitioner. And she's always been in sort of the dermatology and aesthetic field. And she's helped other doctors run their skincare facilities or departments. And after 10 years of doing that, she said, you know what? I want to do this for myself. And she has a partner, but they started their own cosmetic dermatology boutique. I think mm-hmm. I got that in the right order. It's called Complexion, which I think is a great name.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'd love to take credit for it, but they came up with it themselves and it's brilliant. And they are just, you know, growing like a weed. They started out with, you know, 4 treatment rooms. They just moved into a bigger space with 8 treatment rooms and a lot of providers. And they only take, you know, kind of the best of the best. And they're real boutique and they still super hands-on. There are a lot of folks that sort of try and replicate it, and they build one and go try and build 10 more, and you know the quality suffers. But she's really built a great thing, and she's the power in this couple for sure. So
that's great.
Yeah, and we just bought a new building, and Innsbank has been really supportive of it. But one of the side hustles, if you will, has been real estate. So the building where we put Calvert Street. So when we put Calvert Street together 14 years ago, we were subletting in Midtown, Nashville, kind of year to year lease. And it was sort of the recession. So I think the owner was just happy to have somebody in there. But as we came out of the recession, I could tell he was going to sell the building and do something else. And so we started looking for real estate, and we found a great piece of property downtown that's on the National Registry of Historic Places, and love being able to kind of renovate this old historic structure to its original grandeur. And we've put our office there on the second floor. And then on the first floor, when Natalie started Complexion, she said, where can I put my office? And I was like, you have the whole first floor of this building that we already own. You should just move in there.
That.
And so she did. And so it's sort of become a kind of a side hobby, if you will, is historic preservation. And there's a lot of kind of old Nashville that people are tearing down or they're redeveloping over top of. And we were fortunate to be able to save this old building. And since then, we've actually purchased a couple of other smaller buildings with the help of the bank to sort of adaptively reuse these structures and turn them into something else without having to tear it down and put up some shiny glass, you know, box of whatever. And so that's become sort of the side hustle, if you will, which has been a lot of fun for both of us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
you're gonna start a walking tour company and
No, we're
the ghost tours sites of Nashville. Yeah.
if this building could talk, we just did a tour with Historic Nashville. They came in 2 weekends ago, and they brought in the granddaughter. She's 92 years old. The granddaughter of the builder and the architect of the building, and she sort of remembered it growing up
a little bit.
And
wow.
They she's on their board, and so they brought her in, and we gave a tour to 50 historic preservationists of the building, and got, and we had like one of those dumbwaiter elevators, like the rope and pulley. And so we like went down to the basement and just had a, had a great time with that. It was a lot of fun to see that. So
that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Is it haunted?
No.
Not that you know.
Not that I know of. Yeah, fortunately.
Have you stayed the night there?
Yeah, spend the night.
That's the real test.
I've pulled an all-nighter or two. Okay. Just at work.
That's the healthy level of stress that you were alluding to earlier. Right.
True.
But doors didn't open and close by themselves, and lights didn't flicker on and off.
No.
All right. Well, maybe the next one.
Well,
there's a lot of buildings downtown where, you know, you can purchase them and we can find out.
That's true.
So
we just bought one in Sylvan Park. And it's right off of Charlotte.
Uh-huh.
And it was an old neighborhood grocery store. And it was built in 1930. And it was the John E. Lawrence and Sons Grocery. And back in the day in that neighborhood, you used to have these little neighborhood groceries every 5 or 10 blocks just spread out. And that's where you'd come get your groceries. And all of them, with the exception of maybe one, have been torn down over the years. They're now parking lots or redevelopment. And there's this great old building that has sat vacant for the past 7 years. And Natalie and I, we would ride bikes past there, you know, run past there. That's right near the farmer's market. And we've always said, man, that would be a great little, you know, wine bar or restaurant or whatever. And so I just kept calling the owner, and he finally agreed to sell it last year and said, okay, it's yours. So we're taking it through the process with Metro to get the right permitting and everything in place, but we're going to put a little restaurant in there and turn it into a little wine bar, a little restaurant.
As someone who lives on the other side of Charlotte, right off of 46, I want this lot.
There you go.
You got a new spot.
Because I always want, anytime there's like a new spot that crops up in West Nashville, I'm so excited.
So you've been to Answer, I'm sure.
That is like one of our favorites.
Well, this will be closer to you.
Yeah.
It's at 44th and Park.
Okay.
So it's a little white building surrounded by church parking lots.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all boarded up now because somebody knocked out all the windows. But we're going to repair it and fix it up, and it won't be open for another year probably, but
that's okay. I'll still be there. So,
there you go.
Opening day,
there you go.
You know, we'll walk on down.
I'll give you an invitation.
But yeah, Answer's one of our, favorite spots. Like we went there for my birthday this year. Mm-hmm. It's just their cocktails are so good and their menu changes with the season. And I love any restaurant. If you tell me your menu changes with the season, like I'm off. Yeah. I'm like, okay, when can I be there? That's like my love language.
It's a great spot.
And so, yeah, it is. And there's a lot of good little spots, especially like even in the Nations, like I feel like the Nations kind of has more of a business district, if you will, than like Sylvan Park does.
Yep.
But like new stuff, we have like a Jenny's now. We've got a few breweries. It's like stuff's coming alive over there. Like you can't get me out of there.
I want to ask a panel interview question.
Ooh.
Because they're fun.
Our favorite one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
At least it's my favorite. What's something weird that makes you happy?
Something weird that makes me happy. Do you guys have kids?
I have kids? 3 stepkids, yeah.
Okay, kids?
No.
Kids? All right, not for...
I'm a kid.
Not for...
Predators over children.
Not for... This doesn't make the final cut. The thing that comes to mind is if any other kids run around like the playground or whatever and they have a snotty nose, it is the grossest thing ever. But when it's your own kid and you're like, hey, Hunter, come here, like blow your nose real fast. And he blows and it like a giant booger comes out. I'm like, that is so satisfying to me. Like... I'm like, God, can't you breathe easier now, kid? Like, isn't your life better? Like, or like before they go to bed, I'm like, you got to blow your nose. Like, huh? And I make them blow their nose. And the things that come out of their nose, it's like just a while. I don't want to touch it.
Yeah.
But just like, it's so satisfying knowing that like, it's not going to show up on their shirt later or somebody else's clothes or at the park in front of
their
friends or whatever.
Like, and you can just sense the relief that they must feel. Just,
it's so satisfying to me. Do not put that in the final intro, but.
So do you like watching the Dr. Pimple Popper videos then?
No, my wife does. She's in aesthetics.
Like, she definitely loves that. Yeah.
And the other day I had an ingrown hair or something and she's like, what is that? I was like, that's an ingrown hair. She's like, can I get
can
it?
I
and
I'm do
like,
it?
And so I let her pick it whatever and she's so satisfied by it.
I do, like
it's gross.
Same like if my husband has like any I'm like yeah. mad if he popped it instead of letting me do it. I'm like, you've obviously played with that instead of waiting for me to get home.
Yeah. How dare you?
How rude. Like, you know that I enjoy this more than you do. Like, let me go get the Q-tips. Because at least, Natalie would probably tell us all. Like,
she's make got sure all you the use stuff.
Q-tips,
she's
not
got...
the not your fingernails, that sort of thing. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, no. And also, I don't want to touch it. I don't know. There's something, like, satisfying about the act of, like, I don't know. It's just weird.
But a little bit.
I wouldn't watch the videos, though. Like, that's too much. Like, some of those TikTok videos are a lot,
it's
especially when it's like something that's clearly infected. Mm-mm. You're like, I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm never eating again.
That's my wife, though. She loves it.
How did you and Natalie meet?
We met on Craigslist.
Stop. Tell me more right now.
Is it the people, like the one that's like just people who were telling how they saw
or like
other people?
Misconnections?
Misconnections.
No.
Okay.
I was selling a table. I had lived in these tiny apartments in DC and then in San Francisco. And I always had just like, there was no dining room. It was just like this little eat-in kitchen thing. And I had this table with nice leather back chairs or whatever. It was like a high top bar style table. And when I moved to Nashville, I bought a place in East Nashville. And all of a sudden I had a dining room, and the square table wasn't going to work in this dining room. So I wrap it up in furniture blankets, put it in the garage, and I, you know, get a proper dining room table. And after a few months, I was like, "This, I'm not going to do anything with this. Like, I need to just sell it on Craigslist." And so I listed on Craigslist. And the first email I got back was from like a Nigerian princess. And she, like, if I wired her $500, she's going to show up with $1,000, or I don't know what it was, but it wasn't real, right? And a few like fake emails like that. And then I got one from nre721@gmail.com that said, "Hey, I'm moving into a new place, and you know, your table is great, but I'm not going to give you full price." I was like, "You sound normal. Just come over and get it.
You
like, whatever."
Normal.
And I had said in the ad I would deliver the table. I've got a truck. And so I said, "I'll deliver the table." And I get another email. It's like, "Great, I'm out of town. But my mother is in town. And so she's going to come by and leave you a check." And I was like, "I don't care. Like, just come by and leave a check." Mm-hmm. And then the day of, it was like a Sunday, I'd gone out for a run with my dog and come back in, and I get a message that says, "Hey, I'm on my way," or whatever. "My daughter's back from the beach." And so I'm like, "I don't care. Just show up and take the table or leave a check or whatever." And I look out the window, you know, 5 minutes later, and there's this 6-foot blonde walking up my front step. And I think I'm about to get pranked, you know, like. and she's with her mother, who was in town, and Natalie's sister lives here also, so I think she was visiting or whatever. So the two of them come in, and I'm just like, you know, starstruck. I'm like trying to keep it together, and I'm in East Nashville, and I'm in running shorts that are probably a little too short and a t-shirt that's probably a little too tight. I'm wearing my San Francisco Giants baseball hat, and I just bought this house from a guy in East Nashville. He was moving away, and the kitchen was still teal, and the living room was pink, and there, you know, 50 pansies planted out front. And I'm wearing my San Francisco ball cap and these short shorts, and I'm like, "Oh, she's gonna think I'm gay." Not that there's anything wrong with it, and
but it doesn't give you a chance.
I'm not even gonna get the opportunity here, and so I had to reel it in pretty quick. And then her mom's there, like I can't. You know,
you can't hit on her, and mom's there.
And like a month earlier, there was like the Craigslist killer thing, which was tragic, but it was like fresh in the news. And so
you're like, I can't
be that guy.
I don't
want
to be like the creepy guy.
Right. Yeah.
So fortunately, I had said I was going to deliver the table. And so they look at the table and say, "Hey, this is great. Exactly what we thought. Like, here's the check." And she said, "My move-in day is next weekend on Saturday. Can you deliver it on Saturday?" I said, "Absolutely. Like, you know, another bite of the apple. Like, oh yeah, definitely." And so I load the table and chairs up.
And put on a suit.
No, right? I actually had to go to work. I had to go to Louisville, Kentucky. It was a Saturday morning, and I was going to deliver the table and then go get a rental car and go up to Louisville. And so I called and I said, "Hey, I've got it all loaded up. I'm headed straight over." She's like, "Okay, yeah, give me an hour." I was like, "Oh," so I just sat there for an hour.
So annoying.
But I finally get over there, and I still remember everything she was wearing, like these perfect little scoop neck shirt. She'd clearly just like gotten out of the shower, and she smelled great and looked great. And I was like, "Is there anybody here to help us unload these chairs or table?" She's like, "No, just me." I was like, no roommate, no boyfriend." She's like, "Nope, just me." I was like,
real smooth.
So Yeah, so we ended up going out after that. We went to PM, if you remember PM on Belmont. There was a little sushi place. And coming from like coastal communities, I was like, where do you go for good sushi? And she sort of knew a little more Nashville than I did. She said, oh, there's a great sushi place over here. And, you know, next thing you know, we got a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And so obviously, you know, we get married and I was like, well, what are we gonna do with this table? Like, we need to sell the table. She's like, we can't sell that table.
No, it's your whole legacy. Yeah.
She's like, we cannot sell. You don't know who you're gonna meet on Craigslist. Like, I was like, all right,
you have
I guess
to
you're
like
right.
enshrine now. You enshrine it now. This is like
I think she's keeping it for her second marriage. I think that she's gonna sell it.
Oh my goodness.
After she gets rid of me, then that'll be the next.
How long have you been married?
12 years.
12 years.
So is she from Nashville?
11 and a half years, going on 12.
Oh, right, right. Because your 12th anniversary, you're going to show her this podcast clip mm-hmm. of you
saying how she's a
up.
Supermodel. Mm-hmm. And
that's right.
Yeah.
You know, we worked at the same building, worked together. We could sneak away and get lunch sometimes together. You know, we didn't carpool that much, but if we had to, we could. If a nanny called out sick or something, we could take the kids and they could be upstairs with me for a few hours and go downstairs with her. And so that was kind of nice. So I'll miss her not being in the building, but she's in a much bigger space, better space. So
yeah,
that's awesome.
This was a great. She was there for 5 years. Great little starter space for them, and now they're just growing like crazy. So
are you interested in renting that space again for someone?
Yeah. So the building we own downtown, one of them, it's surrounded by the federal courthouse, the new federal courthouse. So we're looking to lease that. Potentially to the GSA, the Government Service Administration. They have an interest in putting one of the government offices in that building because of its proximity to the courthouse. And if that doesn't work out, then there's a long list of suitors that would love to be right there. It's a great building, and it's centrally located. And so we're going to keep it and put a tenant in there and preserve it for the long haul, and then, you know, go find another historic building somewhere. Mm-hmm. And,
you know. Well, if I remember correctly, you guys are building out a space in East Nashville for Calvert Street.
Yes.
So talk to us about that.
Yeah. So the current space we have now, we have about 6,000 square feet, but we're growing just with, you know, number of employees and project work and building on our digital team. And we need some more capability and more space. So we purchased a building last year in East Nashville, in between the stadium and Five Points. We're at Main and McFerrin.
Okay.
So Gallatin, Main, right there. And we'll be in 10,000 square feet in the new space. So room to grow into it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, I want to do this work for the next 25 years. So hopefully this is the last office we have to sort of build out. It's a process. But it's fun to kind of take everything that we've learned in the 10 years that we've been in our current space and figure out, all right, how do we build out the next thing? Do we need more conference spaces? Do we need little phone booth, you know, private areas where people can make phone calls and have a little privacy? And we're building out a bigger kitchen and conference room, and we'll be able to host events in there. And, you know, it's building out a little executive area and seating area. So it's fun to put all that together. Well, better parking. It'll be an easier commute. We have a lot of employees that live on the east side. Okay. It'll be easier to get to just downtown. Nashville can just be chaotic on a Thursday or Friday.
That's a lot.
So parking will be easier.
The
commute will be easier for most people. So we're really excited about the new space.
That's awesome.
We're really pumped about it.
So. And you had kind of like COVID already to like learn from, right? Like, I feel like this would have been a scary thing to start doing in like 2019. Mm-hmm. And then the whole world shifts and you're like, we have to rethink what this looks like.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're trying to get people back into the office. I mean, we were set up even before COVID, we were set up to work remote because, you know, we never try to be a Nashville based firm. We want to be a national firm. Mm-hmm. And so we have staff that live across the country. We have staff that commute across the country for their project work. So we've always had to have the technology to communicate in real time. And so, you know, Zoom and Microsoft Teams and all those things. I mean, we were practitioners of that long before COVID. So, when COVID came, it really wasn't too hard for us to pivot and be fully remote, certainly in that early time. So we've always had sort of a remote workforce, if you will. But we do want to make sure we have the space that people can come into and, you know, have, you know, a real presence in the office when they need to be. There's a lot of creativity and a lot of brainstorming that happens in person. It's hard to do over Zoom sometimes. Yeah. And so we wanted to build out the space that reflects sort of the new reality of how people work. And so we still give ultimate flexibility to people to work from home when they need to, or run their errands during the day, and, you know, kind of have the odd hours. We're not a 9-to-5 business. You know, we've got a city, you know, city council meetings start at 7 o'clock or 6:30 or 5 o'clock. So, you know, our staff may be sitting in city council meetings until 2 o'clock in the morning. So if they don't come in the next day at 9 a.m., that's okay. Yeah. That's okay. but we wanted to have a space that, you know, was welcoming and it worked for them, whatever amount of time. If they want to come in 9 to 5, or if they want to come in the afternoon, or if they want to come in the morning and then work from home or travel out. Nice. So the new space is going to be phenomenal. Like a lot of natural light, an outdoor decking area, better kitchen, better conference room, more conference rooms, more kind of shared collaborative spaces. So it's a lot of fun to kind of learn from what we did last time and make an improvement. So we're
done. That's a wrap.
Cool.
Cool. I hope that was all right.
That was fun.
That was awesome.
That was all right. I'm seeing better.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.